Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We've made a good start, but we need to do much, much more. We cannot forget that there are many homeowners who are in crisis through no fault of their own. And a solution that does not have them at its core is no solution at all.
30 issues in 30 days, our presidential election series, issue 19, affordable housing. It came up in the debate last night. The financial crisis has transformed this topic from what we would have discussed a month ago or a year ago, right? 30 issues in 30 days, issue 19, affordable housing. It used to be that when we talked about affordable housing as an issue, we met mostly affordable rental housing, right? Public housing and Section 8 vouchers for poor people, rent control and rent stabilization for the middle class. Affordable rent policies, of course, are still a big issue in the New York area. But the American dream has been so defined by owning your own home that housing policy in the last few years has meant more and more focus on buying, often with nothing down, helping lead to the housing bubble and now the housing bust. So now what? Let's begin with Sarah Ludwig, founder of NEDAP. That's the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project here in New York. She's also co-director of New Yorkers for Responsible Lending, and she sits on the Consumer Advisory Council of the Fed, the Federal Reserve Board. So, Sarah, thanks for coming on WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
You've been tracking foreclosures in the city. I've seen some of your numbers. They're really depressing. What's happening?
Yeah, it's sort of, I guess, beyond depressing at this point because we've been tracking the foreclosure patterns in New York City for years, and we're already using words like crisis in 2004, 2005, and even before then, as we had about 7,000 foreclosure filings in our city in those years. We're now expecting for 2008 a more than doubling of those numbers. Probably, it's likely by the year's end, there will be more than 15,000 new foreclosure actions filed in New York City. And they're not sort of, you know, randomly dispersed. They are overwhelmingly concentrated in communities of color. We're talking about central Brooklyn neighborhoods, southeast Queens, parts of the North Bronx, and the North Shore of Staten Island. So these neighborhoods are being absolutely devastated by the foreclosure crisis that we're in. You've got square blocks where there are 10, 15, 20 families facing foreclosure at any given time. So we're really, you know, have a very big racial justice and economic justice problem on our hands as much as a housing crisis.
And not just individual families, but whole communities when they're concentrated on blocks like that.
Absolutely. And another piece of it is you started by saying that the focus on affordable housing in New York has largely been a renter issue. And it still is in this context as well, if you think about the fact that a lot of the homes in these neighborhoods are 1-4 family homes, and a lot of them are 2-4 family homes. So a lot of them do have rental units in them and have been a source of affordable housing for many years. So it's smaller buildings. It tends to be, you know, the landlord lives in the building and, you know, bought it with a few extra units in it and is renting them out. So it's kind of wiping out a lot of this housing stock as well and putting people into very precarious, very scary housing situations.
You know, in Chicago, I forget what the official title of the official is, sheriff or something like that in Cook County, is refusing to evict tenants, renters, from some of those kinds of homes that are being foreclosed upon because he says those people haven't done anything wrong. They're paying their rent. And just because the bank is repossessing their home, he's not going to throw responsible families out on the street, as apparently he's being asked to do by some of the banks. Are we facing anything like that in New York?
Well, I mean, we are facing sort of massive loss of home and a lot of people scrambling and having in our, you know, really tight housing market, tremendous difficulty finding new housing and relocating. I know in Philly, the sheriff is doing similar things. And, you know, it would be good if we had a public actor here in New York who would take these matters, you know, at front and center. I mean, part of the problem is, you know, you talked about how the rationale of the Cook County sheriff is that the renters didn't do anything wrong. We would say that really what we've been facing for the last decade is a very sort of inequitable, problematic lending industry, particularly in the subprime lending world, so that a lot of these homeowners didn't do anything wrong either. Many of the people in foreclosure got loans not to purchase homes in New York City, but to refinance already existing mortgages. So there's kind of, as we peel away the layers of this problem, we see that it's even more profound than we're already saying, because a lot of the people who are in foreclosure now have lived in their homes for decades. They've really, it's sort of the social fabric of these communities coming apart, because they own their homes, they bought them relatively cheaply, they've raised their families, they're older now, and we're really targeted for just unspeakably abusive lending practices, whether it started, you know, a decade ago with targeted refinancings to strip equity out of these homes, or in more recent times, the mortgages that are, you know, kind of called exotic mortgages in the industry, or non-traditional mortgages, where people would make payments but be paying interest only, or have an option on what they were paying so that they weren't actually paying down the mortgage, and the mortgage amount was actually going up with each month that they were paying the mortgage. So we've got a whole array of products that got into the mix, largely fueled by a very robust appetite on Wall Street to purchase these loans, that really wreak havoc in these communities as well.
We played the clip of Senator Obama from the bailout bill debate saying foreclosure relief must be part of any plan. Let me play you a clip of Senator McCain making his proposal to buy the bad mortgages from homeowners.
I would order the Secretary of the Treasury to immediately buy up the bad home loan mortgages in America and renegotiate at the new value of those homes, at the diminished value of those homes, and let people make those, be able to make those payments and stay in their homes. Is it expensive? Yes. But we all know, my friends, until we stabilize home values in America, we're never going to start turning around and creating jobs and fixing our economy.
Do you like that plan, Sarah from NEDAP, Sarah Ludwig?
It's interesting, because I have to be completely frank with you, Brian. I don't really understand what he's saying. I've been trying and trying to understand it. I mean, the fact of the matter, though, to the extent I do understand where he's going with it, is that there are so many people in New York and across the country who owe much more than their homes are worth. I mean, in New York, you know, not only do we have these just astronomical housing prices where people have paid, you know, working people with household incomes of $50,000, $60,000, if that, who were sold homes, you know, that were $400,000, $500,000, you know, in the last few years because of the way that the loan products were structured. These homes often were fraudulently also overappraised. So you do have a lot of people who are what we say upside down in their mortgages. So he's getting at a real problem out there, which is there has to be a resetting of these mortgages. But there's a much more direct route to this, which is that the servicers, the companies that deal with the homeowners in terms of collecting the rents, are also the same companies that bring the foreclosure actions when they sue to get the collateral if the person's in default. And the servicers really need to be pressed to modify these mortgages, to work with homeowners and community groups and legal services organizations to reset these mortgages on affordable terms. That's one thing. The second is you wouldn't need this McCain approach if you did what people have been clamoring for quite a long time, which is a very rational fix, which is that bankruptcy judges need to be given the authority to change or modify these mortgages. It's the one type of loan that bankruptcy judges don't have the authority to reach into and make affordable or reset as part of the bankruptcy proceeding.
You know, part of your mission has long been to get more low-income New Yorkers access to home ownership. And I wonder if at this point, with all that is happening now, if you have any regrets about any of what you've done. You talked about $50,000 a year families getting $400,000 mortgages, which, you know, maybe they were getting messages from lots of places that that might be okay. Did the social mission get in the way of being clear-eyed about risk?
I mean, I think that definitely the push for home ownership was out there in the world. Our organization is a fair credit access organization, so we've never really pushed home ownership. But I get your point. And, you know, there is a sense out there, we're hearing it largely from conservatives, and it's definitely on the list of talking points about our economic crisis, that somehow a sort of overzealous push for home ownership has caused our financial crisis. And that is a disingenuous argument. It is completely unfounded. There are laws that encourage banks, for example, to make mortgages on an equitable basis, but those laws also say, within the bounds of safe and sound banking principles, that the lending that they do to help people become homeowners or refinance their mortgages has to be done in a sound manner. And what happened in the mix of deregulation of the last 10 or 15 years, the booming real estate market we had in New York, and the sort of feeding frenzy that we saw on Wall Street, is that sound underwriting absolutely went out the window. We just didn't see it. And the sort of glimmer of hope we have is that there's going to be a restoration of sound underwriting as we go forward, and a much more sober approach to home ownership as well.
But if you are a credit availability advocate, then was it a dream come true for a little while for you, seeing so much credit available for so many lower-income New Yorkers?
Well, if it was a dream, it was a nightmare, because...
As it turns out.
Not just as it turns out, but... You know, organizations like ours, there are groups across the country that have been for many years pressing for fair access to credit and community reinvestment as a very important ingredient of neighborhood revitalization, and that if you don't have equal access to financial resources, you have uneven development and destructive effects on communities. And what we started seeing in the mid-90s was a new pattern where into neighborhoods that had been historically redlined, cut off from fair access to credit, not just for homes, by the way, not just for mortgages, but also for small businesses and so forth, these neighborhoods where vacuums had been created over many decades of redlining practices and abandonment by mainstream financial institutions were flooded with very high-cost destabilizing credit. So this is a picture we've never been happy with, and it's something that the regulators knew about. It's something that people in the industry knew about, but there was a kind of collective, I don't want to say denial, but refusal to regulate this, to acknowledge how destructive it was.
And on some people's parts, denial indeed. So what do you think the place of home ownership should be in American society and an expensive home ownership market like New York in particular? One of our next guests is going to argue that the American dream itself should not be defined so much in terms of owning a home. Are you rethinking that too?
Well, it's a tricky gambit, because the fact of the matter is that the home ownership has been historically the most effective way for families to build assets. And if we look at wealth among different racial segments of our population, there is such a huge wealth gap that is almost completely based on the disparities in home ownership rates. So a lot of people have become homeowners as a way not just of fulfilling the American dream, but as part of that, really building assets that are not just for their family at the time, but to transfer to their children and grandchildren. And also,
and we have 15 seconds,
to build equity, to send their kids to school and so forth. So I think we're going to have to absolutely rethink home ownership as that vehicle. But unfortunately, right now, it happens to be the major asset building mechanism that we have.
Sarah Ludwig, founder of NEEDAP, the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project here in New York, also co-director of New Yorkers for Responsible Lending, and she sits on the Consumer Advisory Council of the Federal Reserve Board. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will talk more about the American dream and the past and future place of it, of home ownership in it. Stay with us. Issues in 30 days, issue 19, affordable housing. And as we said earlier, it used to be that when we talked about affordable housing as an issue, we meant mostly affordable rental housing, public housing, Section 8 vouchers, rent control and rent stabilization, affordable rent policies, still a big issue in New York. But the American dream has been so defined by owning your own home that housing policy in the last few decades has meant more and more focus on buying, often with nothing down, helping lead to the housing bubble and now the housing bust. So now what? Let's talk next to two housing policy experts, one more of a Democrat, one more a Republican. Ellen Seidman was director of thrift supervision in the Clinton Treasury Department and also held a senior position at Fannie Mae. The investigative journalism group ProPublica identifies her as one who saw the subprime problem coming, testifying before Congress in the year 2000 about the potential risks. She's now with the New America Foundation. And Howard Husick is vice president for policy research at the Manhattan Institute, formerly director of case studies in public policy at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and an Emmy Award documentary filmmaker with WGBH Public Television in Boston. His recent book is The $1 trillion Housing Mistake, a collection of his essays from City Journal on the topic. Ellen Seidman, welcome. Howard Husick, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Ellen, what was it you saw coming when you testified in 2000, and why couldn't we stop it?
Well, back in 2000, I had begun to understand how various mortgage products were being marketed and used inappropriately. So I had begun to understand how various communities were being targeted for loans that were potentially at too high interest rates, but much more importantly, had terms like prepayment penalties, fast-moving adjustable rates with no caps, no escrows for insurance and taxes.
And let me jump in because our time is limited. I think we get the picture. You also worked at Fannie Mae in the 90s. So were you warning to some degree about the very mortgages that your agency, which eventually, as we know, went bust, had been encouraging?
I worked at Fannie Mae from 1987 to 1993.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in that period, a major issue Fannie was facing was exactly the opposite, that we were learning that it isn't essential to have 20% down, 2 years of solid employment history with the same employer, and a whole bunch of other rules of thumb that cut a whole lot of people who were good credit risks all the way through the 90s and, in fact, still into the 2000s with good mortgages out of the market. That's what we were learning back then. We were not making bad, we were not buying bad loans. We were not securitizing bad loans.
So what happened?
What happened? I think a variety of things happened. First of all, I think it's really important to understand that the big increase in homeownership happened between about 1994 and 2001, whereas the explosion of really ugly things that have caused us no end of trouble really started in about 2003. We had a lot more... unregulated or barely regulated, both brokers and mortgage bankers coming into the system.
At Fannie, though, I'm talking about.
At Fannie?
Yeah.
I left Fannie in 1993.
I'm not saying you're responsible for it. Well, all right. We invited the two of you together partly because you have a very specific policy difference, which really informs how we would rebuild affordable housing programs in America after this debacle. Howard, you think the government overinvested in the dream of home ownership in an unsustainable way. Tell us where you're coming from on this.
Well, thanks, Brian. I would not take the line that the government involvement in the housing markets was the sole cause or even the most important cause of the housing bubble and its bursting. The securitization of mortgages created all sorts of complications, and that's a much larger topic. However, not just me, but The Economist, for instance, says politicians also played a big part in America's housing market, has the government's fingerprints all over it. If you look at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, And Ellen is quite right. In the period after 2001, HUD directed those entities to purchase 45% of their mortgages from persons of low and moderate income, 32% from central cities and underserved areas, and 20% from very low-income families. So President Bush was also promoting no down payment loans, but I think the Democratic Congress was pushing Fannie and Freddie, and this is something it must not do going forward as we seek to rebuild our regulatory structure, to buy up just about anything that moved from certain neighborhoods. And that was bad for those neighborhoods, and it created the moral hazard whose whirlwind we're now reaping.
Do you think, and I read something in one of your articles that seemed to suggest this, that you think Fannie and Freddie were ill-conceived in the first place for straying from market principles in home loaning, lending for social goals? Is
well,
that your position?
I think that I wouldn't take that as an absolute line, but it distresses me to hear Ellen say that they learned the lesson that 20% down was a bad thing. Well, I don't think you want to learn that lesson too thoroughly is something that we've learned since then. Yes, there are creditworthy people who may be able to put only 10% down, but going forward, you know, credit scoring allows us to have a very good sense of who's able to repay loans, and restoring fiscal prudence as the guiding principle of the lending system seems like a good idea.
Let me just say, first of all, I didn't say that 20% down was a bad thing. I said that in many cases it's unnecessary, and I think understanding how to do homeownership for lower-income families right is really important. Homeownership is a very useful tool, but it can go wrong, and it requires a lot of responsibility and a lot of mutual responsibility. And doing it right requires helping people understand what the rules of the game are and what their responsibilities are. It means lenders not foisting unintelligible instruments on anybody. I mean, we have situations where, you know, PhD students can't understand these instruments. I mean, it's just it has to be done well. But the point is, we know how to do it well. The University of North Carolina just put out a study where they compared matched sets of subprime borrowers who had received 30-year fixed-rate loans made through banks, frequently for CRA purposes, with adjustable-rate mortgages made through brokers, frequently with prepayment penalties. The default rate is five times as high in the latter case than in the former. And in the former case, it's actually lower than FHA defaults.
Right.
So, you know, it can be done well.
I want to
say something about credit scoring.
Hang on. I want to move this forward because our time is limited, and that was really interesting to hear that particular piece of disagreement in each of your views. I want to get each of your reactions to some of the candidates' proposals for moving forward, since this is in the context of an election series. Here is John McCain proposing to help struggling homeowners by the government buying some of their mortgages.
The catalyst for this housing crisis was the Fannie and Freddie Mae that caused subprime lending situation that now caused the housing market in America to collapse. I am convinced that until we reverse this continued decline in home ownership and put a floor under it, and so that people have not only the hope and belief they can stay in their homes and realize the American dream, but that value will come up. Now, we have allocated $750 billion. Let's take 300 of that billion and go in and buy those home loan mortgages and negotiate with those people in their homes, 11 million homes or more, so that they can afford to pay the mortgage, stay in their home. Now, I know the criticism of this. Well, what about the citizen that stayed in their homes, that paid their mortgage payments? It doesn't help that person in their home if the next door neighbor's house is abandoned. And so we've got to reverse this. We ought to put the homeowners first, and I am disappointed that Secretary Paulson and others have not made that their first priority.
So Senator McCain, in another of our extended clips from the debate, not just the little sound bites, that was from last night's debate. And here is Senator Obama proposing homeowner relief in a different way.
Senator McCain, I agree with your idea that we've got to help homeowners. That's why we included in the financial package a proposal to get homeowners in a position where they can renegotiate their mortgages. I disagree with Senator McCain in how to do it, because the way Senator McCain has designed his plan, it could be a giveaway to banks if we're buying full price for mortgages that now are worth a lot less, and we don't want to waste taxpayer money. And we've got to get the financial package working much quicker than it's been working.
All right. So, Howard Husick, you're the conservative here. Is John McCain on the right track for you?
I think they're both on the right track, and the devil's going to be in the details on this thing. Listen, the government was very involved in the housing market, and the government's going to have to be involved in stabilizing housing prices. That's just the reality. You know, Alan Blinder from Princeton proposed 8 months ago something called a revival of the Depression-era homeowner loan corporation. We have to get the market stabilized, and that does involve purchase of bad mortgages, notwithstanding the unfortunate message that may send. Senator McCain is exactly right that having abandoned and even mortgage delinquent houses on the same block as other homeowners is a risk to everybody's property values. It's going to be hard to figure this thing out, though. I think Senator Obama is a little bit naive there in saying, well, you're going to bail out the banks. Those loans have been passed on to investors around the world. The real challenge is going to be find out who owns these mortgages, and how can we even begin a renegotiation? The Treasury Department has had something called the Hope Now program for the last several months, and I don't think it's done too well in getting renegotiations going on because it's very complex even to engage in them.
Ellen, how would you compare those two?
Well, actually, I don't have an enormous amount of disagreement with Howard. First of all, Alan Blinder has definitely been on the right track. I was back there with him back at the beginning of the year urging a similar program. When the Hope Now program came out, I said, you know, this is an interesting start, but I'll bet it's going to not work. We need Plan B. I think that a major issue with Senator McCain's proposal has been his proposal to buy these loans at par. The proposal in the Dodd-Frank bill over the summer, which is what Senator Obama was referring to, would have required a haircut so that...
par and a haircut mean either they're buying it at the original value of the mortgage,
right,
or some newly discounted.
From. Yes. And with some discount from, everybody shares in the pain. If you buy it at par, all of the benefit goes to whether it's the original lender or the ultimate investors. In any event, it is a problem for the taxpayer. Howard's absolutely right that the issue of fixing the mortgages that and restructuring them when they've been so divided is incredibly difficult. It's one of the reasons why I think that Senator Obama's support for a change in the bankruptcy law, which he talked about last night, is so important, because what it says to the servicers is these changes are going to be made one way or the other. Get in there and do it before we need a judge to do it.
All right. We just have a minute left. Howard, big think, you advocate more renting and less owning for lower-income Americans. Do you think federal housing assistance should reset to more of a rental-oriented set of policies? Didn't Washington get away from that during the administration? I need this in 30 seconds.
I don't think that we should conclude from the present situation that we need more rent subsidies. Rent subsidies have been increasing significantly, and we know that general rents are going down. This is a time to encourage property owners to get into the rental housing business to make sure we don't make it difficult for them, for instance, to evict problem tenants, if that were other barriers to entry to getting people into the landlording business. Let's scoop up some of these properties, and we could see reasonable rents emerge from the market if we take advantage of this opportunity.
Ellen, same question.
We need
seconds.
More quality, affordable rental housing near jobs and public transportation. If it can be done privately, terrific, but so far that hasn't happened. We need some federal assistance in addition.
Ellen Seidman, Howard Husick, thank you both very much. And we'll continue this with the New York City housing commissioner, Sean Donovan. He's got a great reputation in this field. He used to work for HUD, and Mayor Bloomberg has been very ambitious in this area. So how is this all going to affect New York's plans and housing in New York? Stay with us as we continue 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 19, Affordable Housing. Issues in 30 Days, Affordable Housing. Our final guest for a final few minutes, Sean Donovan, at the center of the storm, really, as New York City's commissioner of the Department of Housing Preservation and Development, the city's housing department. Commissioner, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be with you, Brian.
And just real quick, I understand that protections for low-income rental housing were actually included in the recent bailout bill. Does this affect New York?
It absolutely does, and that was something that we worked very closely with Senator Schumer and the entire New York City delegation to get in there. It's one of the things that people don't often recognize about the foreclosure crisis is that if you look at New York and most other cities, there are renters living in two, three, four-family homes that are being foreclosed on, and they're some of the most innocent victims of the crisis that we're going through. And there are also larger buildings that are at risk as well. So absolutely, there are folks that are being affected, and we are working hard not only on the federal level but locally to make sure that we can protect those folks. We are purchasing homes to renovate them, to protect the residents, and a whole range of other things to try to make sure that we're protecting our neighborhoods.
One of Mayor Bloomberg's hallmark policies has been his promise to build a large number of affordable housing units. Was it 165,000?
Yeah.
What is this crisis due to that?
Well, I'm very happy to say that just last month we celebrated up in the South Bronx with the mayor reaching the halfway point for the housing plan right on schedule. So that's, you got the number exactly right, 82,500 units, enough housing in the whole plan for the entire city of Atlanta, Georgia. So a huge commitment. And what he said very clearly is despite what's happening fiscally in the city, we are not going to back away from that commitment of 165,000 units. It may take us a year longer to get there, but we are absolutely keeping our commitment to the goal of 165,000 units.
You're in a politically independent, officially independent Mayor Bloomberg administration. Any comment on the competing Obama and McCain plans for digging us out of this as it pertains to housing?
Well, you know, what's happening in the foreclosure crisis, and particularly with the plan the Treasury is putting together, whoever is in power in the next administration has to figure out a way to make sure that this is a program that helps Main Street. We've heard that, but the details of doing that are complicated. And really nobody at this point has heard from the current administration a plan to get beyond these very complex securities to the underlying mortgages and the homes. And I think there are some good ideas out there about changing accounting rules, buying servicing rights, and a whole bunch of very important strategies that we haven't heard anything about. And I really do
like
hope
what?
That the
like
correct,
what? Name one.
Two that I just mentioned. There's an opportunity to buy servicing rights on these portfolios and for the Treasury to aggressively go after modifying mortgages, making sure that people can stay in their homes at the right prices. And I think even before we get to the next administration, I think this administration needs to really focus on that and get it going, because we don't have time to waste here, obviously.
We've got less than a minute. You used to work at HUD. Is ownership, the ownership society, and all of that as it pertains to housing, the way to go in the future, or should the focus move more back to rentals?
I don't think it's an either-or. And one of the things I think it's important, Brian, that we don't lose sight of, making home ownership work for low and moderate income people is something we've proven. We've created more than 17,000 units of home ownership under the mayor's housing plan. We've had five foreclosures. Only five. So we've shown in New York, and there are lots of other places around the country, it can be done right. But I also think we need to take another look at rental as a very, very important option. We've learned an enormous amount in New York City and around the country over the last 20 or 30 years about how to do rental housing right. We have a
whole range of new models that work with the private sector, but HUD has not evolved and changed over the last decade to be able to keep up with what's happening at the state and local level. And so we really do need a new federal commitment.
Sean Donovan, the commissioner of the Department of Housing Preservation and Development, that was really interesting. Thank you very much.
Great to be with you.
Important stuff. 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 19, affordable housing. There it is. Tomorrow, issue 20, healthcare. Have a great day. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Leonard Lopate right after the news.